okay, we're going to kind of reopen everything here at 888-957-9570. Mason Crosby joins us in 20 minutes. But the big news of the day is that Brock Purdy started a throwing program in practice today and left halfway through. His normal Thursday starting quarterback media availability was canceled. And so now there is confusion and question with regard to whether or not Brock Purdy is playing. Also, Kyle Shanahan said publicly, Nick Bosa and Trent Williams are in danger of missing this game. It feels like the season is on the brink. It feels like the moment the Niners have been waiting for is here. And as they arrive to it, a whole bucket full of their top players might not be available. And even if they are, they might not be at their best. So this is what Shanahan said about his concern level for Purdy yesterday when Brock was only limited and did not throw.
Not much right now. See how this week goes, but you know, it's limited today, so I think that's good news.
And so far this week has not gone well. And so I look at this 49ers season, and I'm sort of left, I think, in a moment where I don't know what to make of this. At minimum, I guess we'll wait for tomorrow. We'll wait for tomorrow to see what it's all about. But this has the opportunity to be a huge pivot point, quite frankly, in the future of the 49ers. Because think of everything that could happen coming out of this. First of all, Brandon Allen could go out there and play really well. That could change the way people think about Brock. 49ers could go out there and get their butts beat so badly over the next 10 days that their season is done. This injury could dog Brock for the rest of the season, and then where does that leave you with regard to extension talks? This is, and I'd argue, if the Niners lose this weekend and the season sort of feels over, I think this kind of just becomes one of those throw your hands up seasons where you're like, my God, everything that could go wrong did.
Yeah, and if you dip to 5-6 and then you get to Buffalo and you happen to lose that one and you're 5-7, then you will take a hard look at everything, and you'll have to just, you know, rework exactly what you're thinking about for the rest of the year. And then you start to talk about, you know, shutting people down if you're 5-7. And if Arizona wins twice and the Rams jump over you, they're already ahead of you, and you start to get some real distance between you and a playoff berth, then yeah, it definitely would change how you would look at the rest of the year.
I just, like, that's kind of where my emotions went when I saw this today. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I always hesitate to do this. Oh, what else can go wrong? Don't ask.
Right.
Don't ask, because there's always more. But by the same token, I look at this whole season and all the stuff in August, expectations and Super Bowl or bust, and boy, the division, that's a done deal, and 12-5, maybe 13-4. Remember, what was the win total? Was it 11.5?
Just 11.
Okay. Yep. And you and I both were like, whoop, go under.
Yeah.
Go under on that sucker, because it's a harder schedule and there's just a lot going on. And the pressure that comes with the situation the 49ers are in. Even this weekend, did you see the Vivid Seats prediction?
No. We were going to do it yesterday. I never looked.
What? By the way, you can game show music it for real quick here, Grandy. I'll give you plus or minus 4%. Plus or minus 4%. And the Vivid Seats thing, for those of you who don't know, they predict what the crowd size of the road team will be based on ticket sales. So what percentage of the crowd is forecast to be Niner fans at Lambeau Field this weekend? What do you think it is?
Yeah, it's tough to get into Lambeau, but the Niners travel well. So I'm going to say 14% is where the Niners will be.
14%. And what was your guess? You said something yesterday, and I was like, oh, I better be higher
than
that.
Nine, I think I said.
Nine. Okay, so you're up to 14.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
37%.
Jeez. Wow.
Lambeau Field in the freaking November cold.
Yeah. Well, it is a destination, so if you're a Niner fan and you think about a trip that you want to take, cha-ching! You and I talked about it back in July when we looked at the schedule, and I said Buffalo would be the one trip I'd want to make, and yep, you said Green Bay, and here they are back-to-back. So just looking at the opponents, you don't often get to go to Green Bay, and you don't often get to go in this spot where it's, you know, people are calling it a must-win. So 30%?
37.
37. That's a lot.
North of a third. One in every three people plus in this building are going to be wearing T.O. retro jerseys.
That I'd like to see, and I will see it on Sunday. I find that hard to believe. When you look at the crowd, I know not every fan wears a jersey, but that's usually a good indicator when you look in the crowd and you see the colors. And in Lambeau, it's normally a lot of that green and gold, but I guess we're going to see a lot of red. That's the expectation. I don't believe that it's going to be 37%.
Well, I mean,
I have a hard time believing that that's actually what
it's
going to look like.
I don't know why they'd make it up. Like, I mean, they're running numbers based on sales.
Based on tickets, exactly. That seems really high to me, but in Packer fans, I wonder how often they look to resell. If you're a season ticket holder, do you look at your schedule and go, yeah, that's the one I'm going to sell to recoup some of my money?
Well, and normally you would think a team does that when they're not doing that well. Like, the Packers are playing well.
Yeah.
This fan base is into it, man. Like, they got a great division, and they've got a shot. And that division right now is, I'd argue, the most exciting in football. Easily. It's incredible. You know, the Bears were 4-2. They've kind of gone sideways. But they're interesting, too, just because they have the number one pick in the draft, and people kind of want to watch that story unfold. And even if they just get to play foil the rest of the way for these other three teams. But, I mean, you could argue that those are the three best teams in the NFC right now. They're all in the same division.
Yeah. You know, Philly, I think, would have a lot to say about being in that group as well. But at the same time, the NFC West is the only division without a 7-win team or a 7-loss team in it. Every other division has at least one of those things in it, but not this one.
Crazy, man. Crazy. So anyway, 49er fans expected to travel out there, but what are they going to see when they get there? We'll get more information tomorrow, but it well could be Brandon Allen as the quarterback. It well could be Jalen Moore as the left tackle, and it well could be, I don't know, over there at left defensive end, rushing Jordan Love on the other side of Leonard Floyd. I don't know exactly what this team is going to have to offer. And so this, to me, this moment as we sit here today, Dibs, this feels like the most pessimistic moment of 49er football possibly in the last 4 years. I can think of other moments. Jimmy Garoppolo's ACL, Jimmy Garoppolo's ankle situation, along with Bosa and an ACL in the same game against the Jets. That was certainly deflating. Trey Lance getting hurt and not knowing where that was going to go. Then Garoppolo getting hurt and everyone going, well, Brock Purdy can't play. That's the end of this season. But from the moment Brock Purdy walked out onto the field against the Miami Dolphins and won a football game, optimism around the 49ers has been booming. And this, I think, feels at least like it has the potential to be the most deflating moment since Brock Purdy took the field.
Depending on what happens. I mean, Brandon Allen's allowed to go out there and play well, and they can still win the game with their backup quarterback. And you can have, you know, Brock out and Trent out and Nick out, and your depth gets tested, and you go out there and you win the game. So, yes, it feels deflating now, and it feels a little bit demoralizing already at 5-5. And part of it for me is a culmination of what's already happened. The fact that you're not 8-2 and you're not 7-3. I mentioned this earlier in the show. If you were sitting at 7-3 and you were facing everything that you just laid out, you would think, it's a bummer. I really wanted to see the Niners best against Green Bay, but we're still 7-3. Worst case is you lose and you're 7-4, and you're still very much in there. So maybe it's a good thing that you give these guys the week off. But when you're 5-5 and people are calling it a must win, and you don't go there with three of your 8 best players on the field, potentially, now it does feel like a gut punch, and it feels very daunting to go to Green Bay and win.
I also think, man, this has the potential to really be just a game-changing time for Brock Purdy. And maybe I'm feeling that way because of the conversation that sort of unfolded on our show yesterday. You know, we were talking to Greg Cosell, and just to kind of give you the 1-2 punch on this, like, Kyle Shanahan had this comment after practice yesterday, got a lot of attention, comparing Brock Purdy last year to Brock Purdy this year. This is what he said.
It's hard to make a lot of progress after the way he played last year. And it was hard to make a lot of progress after the way he played his seven games in his first year. So I think Brock's playing at the exact same level. I think there's different circumstances around him. You know, our team hasn't been quite as good through this, but it's been close to getting there. Close isn't, doesn't matter. You know, that's why we're 5-5, but a couple plays here and there. And I think we're looking at it totally differently. And that's why we've put ourselves in the hole. And that's why we've made it a lot harder for ourselves here at this back half. But I still think it's going to come down to the same stuff. I bet these next seven games come down to the fourth quarter, and we either get it done or we don't, and we got to find a way to get it done.
Okay, so Kyle says essentially he's playing just as well this year as he did last year. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, who does nothing but crush tape.
Crush it.
Nothing. Nothing. I don't know if he eats. He just crushes tape. And when we told him that Kyle said that, Brock's playing just as well this year as last, this is how Greg responded.
First of all, I'd be truly, truly surprised if Kyle truly meant that. He's giving a press conference.
Right.
So he knows. He knows. Believe me, he knows. I'll give you an example. On their first third quarter possession, okay, he threw to McCaffrey for 6 yards on 3rd and 15. It was just outside the red zone, so they ended up kicking a field goal. So that was a great example of Purdy just not seeing the game with the same innate, refined, nuanced feel of timing and anticipation that we've come to expect. He had 2 throws there. He had a seam route to Samuel, and he had Jennings on the high-low with McCaffrey that he would have made last season without even thinking. So instead, he threw a check down to McCaffrey for 6 yards, and he threw it too quick. It was a clean pocket. He just got rid of it quick. And then they kick a field goal instead of perhaps getting a touchdown. There was another case, and see, some of these occur when there's completions. So you don't think of them as, oh, maybe he didn't see it the right way. Because some of them are completions, but there were too many dropbacks in this game in which, to me, and I've been watching the Niners, you know, for years and years and years, as you guys know, in which I do not believe, and again, you know, I'm not talking to Kyle, obviously, but where I believe he just did not process the route concept versus the coverage in the way that he needed to and with the necessary clarity.
Now, Kyle said something today that I also caught that I find interesting, and he made the comment to a reporter that he did not feel like the shoulder injury that Brock is experiencing held him back in this game against Seattle. Now, what I would have loved to follow up on is, does that mean that you're sure that this injury happened in that game? Or is this something that's been going on maybe for more than 1 week? I don't know that.
Right. He was asked if he knew what play he got it hurt on, and he didn't know.
He said no.
Yeah.
So I don't know when this happened to Brock. Here's what I do know. Number of throws, 20-plus yards downfield, last 2 games, 0. And he had been averaging 3.5 per game up to that point in the first 8 games of the season. He's flat out not done it. And then now here's Greg Cosell going, boy, there's people open downfield. He doesn't see it. I find that incredibly hard to believe. That's what Brock does. If there's one, if someone said, if he landed here from Mars, hey, tell me about Brock Purdy. What does he do well? He sees it. He can't always throw the ball over the heads of the defensive linemen. And he doesn't have this physical tools of Jordan Love. But my gosh, he can process the field and see it. And he's not throwing it. He's not letting it rip. And I don't know. I don't know what Brock's dealing with right now. It may well be true that he's been hurt for a while. That would help explain some things. I do know that.
Right, but I do think that just because you see it doesn't mean you see it every time. And also, when you have an offensive line that maybe is collapsing around you more than it used to, it's harder to actually see it. And I watch the tape, and I don't see Brock Purdy standing in and delivering the ball like he did last year. It seems like when the pocket is collapsing, he's getting out of there. Last year, there were so many throws where he would hold it for the last minute and just wait as long as he could.
Yep.
And then deliver it, let it rip, and deliver big-time throws down the field. This year, things are breaking down in front of him, and he's getting out of there. And he's scrambling, and he's re-scrambling, and he's running around like a madman, and either throwing it away or running and diving for the pylon, which is another play where he might have hurt the shoulder, because he goes with the left, and then he ends up twisting and landing on his right shoulder a little bit. You just don't know where he got dinged up. But,
no idea. But,
you know, for me, if you're out there and you're playing, you've got to be held responsible for the fact that you got to be able to go out there and play and make the throws and make the plays that you have to make.
None of this is to create an excuse. But, again, I go back to the question that we've been asking since the start of the show. If you're watching 49er football, this could be about Brock or anything. When you look at these numbers that we're now aware of, this team that goes to the NFC title game almost every year and now is sitting here 5-5 with three division losses, they can't score in the red zone. They can't beat they can't hold a lead late. They can't push that 4-point lead or that 6-point lead. They can't push it to 14. They can't do any of these things. And Brock suddenly isn't seeing this and isn't seeing that. And I only have one question. It's one word. Why? Why? We're left to search for answers. This one, I think, would be helpful. Like, what would you do in the pocket if your shoulder hurt? I know two things I would do. I would, A, not let it rip downfield. And, B, if I felt like someone was about to hit me, get the hell out of there. So that I can control where I'm going to fall, how I'm going to be hit. I don't know if any of this is true, but if it is, it would explain a lot of how we're seeing Brock Purdy play.
Right. It would explain it, but for me, it wouldn't excuse it. I'm not saying that you're saying that at all, but you have to be in a spot where you can make the throws, and if the scheme has a play design where you've got 20 yards down the field, a guy who breaks open, you got to be able to throw it to him. And he had a few of those toward the end of the game, certainly in that drive in the third quarter where they ended up not getting it done. And that's just something that you've got to figure out. If he is somewhat limited, then you got to change the way you're going about running your offense. And you can't really do that because teams already are playing a lot of press man against you. And they're saying, all right, Debo, go ahead and separate. You won't. And Juwan Jennings, not great at separating. And the rest of it. And so defenses now, you don't even have to worry about getting beat deep because if the quarterback's shoulder hurts and the wide receivers can't get open anyway, you can go ahead and tee off. And that's what's kind of happened.
Tomorrow's going to be a big day.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's going to be a really, really, really big
day. The will he or won't he moment.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, that's Friday practice. And, you know, if it's a limited session, okay, I guess maybe there'll still be some question about the whole thing, but we're going to get some questions answered and a little bit more clarity on this. But it really, to me, it feels like this is, it just feels like everything's on the edge of a cliff. And it already felt like it was a back against the wall type of a game. But if you're really telling me now that there is a strong possibility that in this situation, against this opponent, on the road, Green Bay, week 12, and you're going to go do this without Purdy, Bosa, and Williams? I mean, what would you expect to happen out there this weekend?
Well, I would say that the spread would jump to probably 7.5.
Which it hasn't yet.
Correct, because we don't have definitive answers on any of those. But if Brock Purdy's worth about 5 points, I think, is what your odds maker friend John Avello told us before. John Avello. So if it's at 2.5 now and it's at 3 in some shops and Brock officially is out, that thing could jump to 7.5, 8. And if you add in a sprinkle of no Nick and no Trent, well, geez, what would I expect? I would expect that you're in a heap of trouble.
I mean, the good news, if you're really hoping Purdy plays, the good news is that the spread has not jumped much, and people in Vegas know more than we know.
Of course.
They know more about injuries, and they didn't even pull it off the board. So, to me, I'm getting the message that right now, Vegas is not under the impression that Purdy's going to miss this game.
Right.
That's Vegas' impression, and that's just my translation of it. But
and tomorrow is big because for the Niners, if you realize that Brock may not be able to go, well, you've got to get Brandon Allen up to speed on everything, and you got to totally rework a lot of the plays you want to run to suit what he does best. And I think Friday normally is the red zone installation, which maybe they should have started that today and, you know, do 2 days on the red zone. But you're getting down to the nitty-gritty of preparation, so for Shanahan, he's got to know far in advance what he's going to be working with.
1057 The Fan out there in Wisconsin, in Green Bay, is former Packers kicker Mason Crosby, who now joins us on the River Islands guest line. And I never had the chance to talk to Mason before in my life. And now here it is, the second time this day. I was lucky enough to get to go on his show this morning in Wisconsin. And now Mason joins us here on Willard and Dibbs. Hi, Mason. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Yeah, a little cross-cultural, back and forth, jumping on each other's shows. So y'all have a long one here. Y'all go for 4 hours in the evening there and out there in San Fran, huh?
We don't mess around, Mason.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, we're long-haul people. Hey, what do you make? Because one thing's different from when I talked to you this morning, and that is that Brock Purdy left in the middle of practice. What do you make of that news?
I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I saw that, honestly, right before I was coming on, just kind of, reading up on the day. And, saw that he left. Someone sent something, all the stuff. The trainer was rubbing his shoulder, looking at all the stuff. And I heard y'all talking about, it doesn't look like Vegas and the lines have, quite changed yet to indicate that he is going to be out or that they're assuming he's going to be out. But, not practicing on Thursday, going and being taken off is not usually a good sign and a recipe for success to be on the field on Sunday.
When you get to a Thursday situation and now we're heading into Friday, if you want to elevate the backup at that point, how much does that put you behind the eight ball from an offensive scheme standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, Friday is usually just like kind of a cleanup day. I think I heard you saying like a red zone day, just a day to just kind of get all your things dialed in that you might need through the week. You're almost going to probably, you're never going to add anything on Friday, but you might drop some stuff, in the plan that just maybe didn't go well throughout the week and want to adjust. So if you have a guy coming in and able to at least get a Friday practice in, that's better than something happening on Friday and not having any action and just going into a Saturday and hoping for the best on Sunday. So, you got Brandon Allen there. You got Dobbs as well, right? So, or is Dobbs out? I can't remember.
It would be, yeah, no, they're both ready to roll. But Brandon, Brandon would be the starter if Brock can't go.
So definitely not like a, it's not a one for one, bringing in somebody that just, all right, can plug and play. But, I don't think Brandon Allen is a huge step down, and especially a well-coached team like, Shanahan has and, what they try to do on offense, probably could adjust and find a way. I mean, the Packers showed what they could do with Malik Willis, in that three-game stretch whenever Jordan Love wasn't there.
Yeah, actually, that's something I wanted to ask you about. Jordan Love gets a lot of love. He's got tremendous physical gifts. He's also, in seven games, I think this year, if I have that right, has 11 interceptions, and the Packers' record is only 4-3. What do you think of his season so far?
Yeah, he's... he had an interception last week against Chicago that I wouldn't say was like... it wasn't one that was because of a bad decision. Ball just kind of got away from him. He looked like he looked like he was feeling better coming off that bye week. But previous games, it looked like he was trying to create and force and find ways to, get the ball to certain guys or make that special throw, to do something outside of himself. And, some of those decisions, really cost him, especially in that Lions game, right? Right before half, whenever he threw the pick six, he just looked like he was just kind of reeling a little bit, trying to find the perfect play instead of the play that presents itself. And we're on the radio there in Wisconsin, and you're getting calls or getting things, people saying that they think Malik Willis should just kind of play the rest of the season. The knee jerk reactions because he won a few games. I mean, Jordan Love has stepped in and been exceptional. I was really impressed with what Malik Willis was able to do in his absence and more impressed with Matt LaFleur and the way this coaching staff kind of put together a plan when Jordan Love was out. So I think they found a little bit of rhythm last week with, honestly a limited amount of possession against the Bears. And I think Jordan here, hopefully on his side of things, as the weather deteriorates, it's getting late in the season, they just keep leaning on Josh Jacobs, keep running that ball, because we've been very effective there and trying to keep kind of his whole game plan very simple. So if he does take shots down the field, they're a lot cleaner and not something that he's trying to force.
Yeah, don't tell LaFleur about the defensive softness for the 49ers in the middle, because we would hate to see Josh Jacobs exploit that.
Exactly, right? If Bosa doesn't go, and then you don't have Greenlaw in there. You got a little bit of a light interior for that run game. So I'm assuming that's going to be a Packer game plan. It's trying to run the ball as much as possible, try to find play action off of that, and continue to get Christian Watson the ball. He had a really good game with somewhat limited touches against Chicago, but just find playmakers the ball, because our receivers are good on paper. They have the skill sets. They've done some good things, but at times they've had some drops, had some things that haven't gone their way. So, they're probably going to look to try to get the balls in their hands, let them make plays with their legs, and kind of use their athleticism to get off in the game.
Former Packers kicker Mason Crosby, 105.7 The Fan in Milwaukee, joining us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Hey, Mason, I know you know about this. A few weeks ago here with the Niners, there's a situation where their kicker, Jake Moody, missed three kicks. Deebo Samuel got in his face a little bit. The long snapper then got in Deebo's face. We got a shoving match that comes out of it. How would you react if you missed a kick and a teammate came up and kind of got in your face and said, man, you need to bleep and lock in?
Well, fortunately, never had like an altercation serious like that, on the sideline. I definitely had guys. I had Charles Woodson, at one point, just kind of put his arm around me, less like confrontational, and was just like, hey, man, we need you. You got to come and, get this thing done, lock in. I love talking about the story with him. He was like, you can't go out there and try to make field goals. Like, you are a field goal kicker. Like, kick the dang ball and, put it through the uprights. Like, just do your thing. And honestly, it was simple words that I really actually used through the remainder of my career, just whenever things were reeling a little bit, things weren't going quite right, kind of for a reset, lock in, like, stop trying to make field goals. You see your line, you've done this a million times, just go do your job. Right. So, I was surprised to see that. And honestly, I played with Tabor for a short time in Green Bay. He kind of came through for a little period, and he seems like he's got a little persona, a little vibe and like ego to him. So he stepped up for his kicker, which is his right and all those things. But it's definitely Moody's job as he gets more experienced and gets that kind of presence on this team to own misses. You go out there and you miss. If somebody wants to say something, you look them in the eye and you own it, and you move on. And that guys just want to win and go out there and compete. So I think Moody has a responsibility to kind of take it on himself and own it. But I can always appreciate when a teammate steps up and has someone's back in those situations. That I asked you about it this morning, if it's been a lingering situation, and you kind of assured me it wasn't. But who knows? Those kinds of things sometimes can have some underlying issues if you don't address them directly right away.
It seemed like they squashed it right away, and Moody did come back and make the game winner in that same game that he missed three field goals, so that probably made everyone feel a little bit better about it. How difficult is it as a younger kicker, especially, to go and have to kick somewhere like Lambeau where it's going to be cold and there's going to be elements? Is there any way to prepare for that?
Well, fortunately, they weren't playing today, because the weather conditions up there were really brutal. So it looks like it's going to be at least a decent enough day on Sunday. I hate to say it, but 49ers kickers have had some success, coming into Green Bay and hitting game winners against us in my time there. I think we lost at least two playoff games off the foot of a kicker there from the 49ers. So. I don't think it's one of those where you just have to lock in and kind of have that mindset that you have 3.5 hours You're going to evaluate footing, conditions, wind stuff, everything as you get out on the field, and just not let it be too big of an issue. You know, something, the hardest thing is if you build it up in your mind so much, you know, there's always going to be, you know, differences and changes and challenges that kind of present themselves. So just trying not to have an expectation and going out there and executing what you see, what's happening on the field, and trying not to make stuff up. You know, whenever you're a young kicker, sometimes your mind plays more tricks on you than you know, what the conditions are actually presenting.
Mason Crosby's with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Mason, I want to have some fun with you a little bit here. This is kind of a wacky place to go, but I was watching recently an interview with one of the band members from the band Oasis, and he kind of joked. Yeah, they said, "What's the worst part about being in the band Oasis?" And he arrogantly answered, "The worst part about being in Oasis is that I never got to go to an Oasis show." And so is the worst part about being a Packer that you never get to go to a Packer tailgate?
That might be, you know, honestly, I've heard some amazing stories from my friends and family. So they tell me all the fun things. They kind of have a different perspective from all the experience and all the games. I will tell them though that I always had the best seat in the house. You know, I was right there on the sideline, getting to see everything firsthand, getting to see all the, you know, the audibles and calls that Aaron Rodgers was always making and the adjustments. So I never felt too bad that I got to have the seat that I had for those games. I actually went back this year for an appearance there in Green Bay and was out in the kind of fan parking lot area taking pictures and signing autographs. So I got to experience a little bit of the tailgate atmosphere. I wasn't in the thick of everything, but you know, probably the only thing I was disappointed with, nobody offered me, you know, a beer or a cocktail the whole time.
What?
Which, you know, was shocking.
That's beyond shocking.
Even. I didn't even get a brat.
Like, especially because you're Mason Crosby. Like, Mason, I was lucky enough one time to do the Lambeau tailgate experience. I've never met nicer people in my life. I've never eaten more food in my life. Like, and I didn't know where I was or who was inviting me or what. Like, I didn't know anyone. And you used to play for the team. No one offered you a brat?
I know. You know, it was, I think there's a mindset, you know, I have this clean cut, you know, persona there. So no one, you know, wanted to, you know, break that and offer me a beer or a brat and, you know, just get me going in the whole tailgate atmosphere, I guess. But, you know, I'll definitely go back at some point and then do the whole show, go watch in, you know, a game from the stands and, you know, do the whole thing. But, haven't felt like I'm not quite ready to go and do all of that yet. It's you know, it's still too close from my playing time.
Maybe they didn't offer you because they thought you were still playing. And I was telling the guys earlier that
exactly.
I'm doing fantasy. We all are in a league together, and I was looking for a kicker, and I came across you, and I noticed in Yahoo you've been added three times this week as a kicker to someone's fantasy team. So tell me this: you still kicking?
Well, maybe people are trying to will it to happen. Yeah.
Right?
You know, I haven't officially, you know, made the announcement of my retirement, but, not really getting any looks or, you know, really pushing too hard to do anything. I'm enjoying chasing kids around. We have five kids here at home.
Wow.
So it keeps us really busy. I'm enjoying doing this, radio stuff and kind of diving into the media space a little bit. So, right now, yeah, I have no real interest in going back out on the field, but, you know, who knows what will happen. I'm sure that, that time will come here where I kind of get it in my heart and in my head and it all aligns. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to just, actually formally announce and move on from this thing, but, got to find that right timing, I guess, for myself mentally and, kind of emotionally.
Mason, take it from us. As soon as you get a radio show, your career is over.
It's over, right?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, that's the end of that.
I thought it was only 2 hours, 2 hours a day, but I feel like there's a lot of extra that goes into it.
A couple things. Yep. Yeah, a couple things. All right, Mason, hey, on the way out the door, what's your favorite cheese?
My favorite cheese. Well, you know, It's tough because I was always a sponsored actually by Sartori Cheese there in Wisconsin. Did a great deal by them, so their Bellavitano is one of my favorites. I also like their one. You know, y'all being out there in Cali, and I'm actually going to head to Wine Country here in a few weeks. They had this like a Merlot Bellavitano with a little like edge that was dipped in Merlot. Really tasty. Oof, so
you're natural.
Anything Sartori is awesome.
I don't even know
what a classic pitch, man. Hi, I'm Mason Crosby. I need cheese.
I don't even know what Bellavitano is, but it's really fun to say.
Oh yeah, no, exactly, right? You gotta check it out. If you're at a nice grocery store, look for that Sartori Bellavitano. It's it'll get you right.
And tell them Mason sent you.
Exactly. Maybe they'll give you a couple dollars off.
Where are you going in Wine Country?
A few former teammates of mine actually are in Sonoma.
Uh-huh.
They have three fat guys winery, three former offensive linemen.
Yes.
So I don't know if you've ever heard of that. So
I've seen
Darren
it.
College, Tony Moll, and Jason Spitz. And so we'll go and visit them. My wife and I are actually looking at starting a wine podcast. She's got this whole, you know, a whole plan and a whole, kind of business model put together for that. And so we might be kickstarting that here in the next month or so.
Ooh.
Just our love of wine and, all things. She wants it to be more educational. I'm more of the on the tasting side of things. So enjoying the amazing bottles that we'll be able to open up and enjoy. But she wants to kind of dive into the educational side of wine and why we love it the way we do. So we have some winemaker friends up there in Napa that are going to join us on this journey. And so it's nice. It's going to be a business trip where we get to go and drink wine and hang out for a couple days.
Amazing. Amazing. Kicker Cabernet. I can just see it now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just wait for it.
Perfect. Perfect. Hey, Mason, thanks for doing it, man.
All right. Really appreciate you. Thanks for having me on. And I appreciate you coming on my show earlier today. It was a great time. And hey, I'm hoping for a great one on Sunday. Whatever the result, these games are always exciting.
Well, the Niners are sending their third string out there, so we'll see what happens.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, guys.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you. Mason Crosby joining us here on Willard and Dibbs. And we ended up, we started with football and we ended up with wine and cheese.
Yeah.
There's nothing more 49ers than that.
Totally. Well, the Green Bay and the 49ers, it's a nice collision between the wine sippers and the cheese eaters. It's really the wine and cheese bowl when you think about it.
What's your favorite cheese?
I'd have to think long and hard. We have a lot of Havarti of late. I like a Havarti. It's just a good, solid, flavorful cheese. But if I'm going off the board, Manchego. I like a good Manchego, a little Manche-che. That's probably my favorite cheese.
Manche-che.
Yeah, that's what my son used to call it when he was a kid. Let's get some of that Manche-che. The Manchego.
Like how old? Like what
10.
Kind of... Okay.
Like, precocious 10-year-old.
Was it still cool, or was it?
It was just between us. It wasn't like, okay, you know, he'd walk around school saying it.
I didn't know if he was like 4 years old. Like, man, JJ.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know exactly what you were. What
the
2-year-old
likes string cheese. She likes to.
Okay.
And then when you go to peel it, of course, the response is, Mila can do it.
Yeah, of course Mila
Somebody
can do
it.
Of course you can do it.
I know Mila can do it all.
Yes.
All right.
What's your favorite cheese?
Stupid question on the way out the door.
I like it.
888-957-9570. What's your favorite cheese and why? Look, there's only one answer. The answer is brie. Of course the answer is brie. Like, you get one of those flat crackers, a little jam, a little brie, maybe even a piece of salami. Something like that. Get the charcuterie out there, the brie right in the middle. There's nothing better. There's nothing better than a triple cream brie.
Look at
That's
you.
That's the correct answer to the question.
Nice.
Okay? Although I like the answer you gave earlier that you suddenly then didn't give on the air. Dibbs reveals his secret favorite cheese coming up next on the radio program. 888-957-9570, your favorite cheese. And then we could obviously continue to talk about, how the 49ers might be starting Brandon Allen coming up this weekend. More on that around the bend. It's Willard and Dibbs.
That's a good question.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah.
Why'd you shrink, dude?
What are you talking about? You coward.
You said to me an hour ago.
Longer.
Mozzarella.
Right. Well, I didn't.
And then you got to the with like, and then you didn't want to give mozzarella any love.
I did, but what you put me in was a tough spot because I know we're coming up against it, and I didn't want to spend 2 minutes explaining my nuanced answer about cheese because for me, there are two different levels of cheese, and probably more than just two. There's your regular cheese, your garden variety, Jack, cheddar, Swiss, mozzarella, your everyday cheese.
Yeah, things that go on a cheeseburger.
Things that go on multiple things, like Parmesan. Parmesan's a very good cheese, but it's more of like your ordinary cheese. It's like a 3-yard run. Nice run. It's a nice cheese. And then there's the really fancy cheese, the trick play cheese, the vertical route.
Well, some of those things get ridiculous. Honestly, to all wineries out there, when you put out the charcuterie board, if you put a block of something that has different colored skins on it and is harder than the cement below my feet at the table, what are you doing? Who's eating that? What is that?
Yeah.
What is that? I never know. There's one block of cheese on that board where you're just like, that's for show. Nobody's putting that in their mouth. That's absurd.
There's some extreme cheeses out there. So when you asked me up against it in the break, I didn't think that I had the time to really elaborate on the two different levels of cheese. Now, in your ordinary 3-yard run cheese, it's mozzarella. It's good in a number of different facets.
The pizza,
of course, and you can, you know, put it in, even if you get some of the fancy mozzarellas, you can put it on a piece of bread or a cracker. The mozzarella of the ordinary cheese is very versatile and delicious, but it's not like one of these highfalutin fancy cheeses.
Can I confess something?
Go ahead.
So, like, no joke, what I was saying to Mason, it is a whole world out there at Lambeau Field on game day. It is a whole thing. And these people do not mess around. And so it's not even just the game day. It's the night before the game, the restaurants, everything that's going on. The first time I went out there, the night before the game on a Saturday night, we go out to a white tablecloth, something or other. I don't even know where the hell we were going. You know what I mean? When you're with a group, you're like, whatever. All right, we got a reservation here. You go in there. Before our butts even hit the seats, whole plate for free, just a plate of cheese curds.
Pow!
They go crazy about the cheese curds. They kind of take those personal out there.
I'm going to eat it.
It's like
toasted cheese, basically, right?
Well, that's what I want to confess. I have no clue what the hell that is. Do you know? Does anyone know what a cheese curd is? And literally, the word itself makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it rhymes with turd. And it sounds gross. Cheese curd. I don't even know what it is.
Moist pieces of curdled milk.
Yuck!
And they
take it very personal if you want try their cheese curds. And so it's the only problem I've had with people from Wisconsin, because they're the nicest people ever. They'll give you the shirt off their back. They'll invite you everywhere. There's brats everywhere. But they really want you to try their cheese curds.
Moist.
And I'm like, that's so gross. And then you find out what it is, and it's even grosser than you thought.
Moist.
Moist what?
Piece of curdled milk.
What on earth? Who thought of making that food?
So here's how you do it, Californians. Take some milk, pour it in a glass, leave it outside.
For a week?
Weeks. And then when it starts to get curdled and moist, serve it to your friends. Hi, I'm Dan Dibley for Cheese Curds.
What is
Before
that?
Before we go to the cheese line, I just was fascinated by the kicking portion of it. Mason Crosby kicked in, and I want to get the number right, 261 games.
Okay.
He appeared in 261 games. How many times do you think he missed 3 field goals?
In a game?
In a game.
The answer is either 1 or 0.
Da-da-da.
1.
The answer is 2.
Oh.
He went 4 for 7 in a game.
Oh.
And he went 1 for 5.
He missed 4?
And a loss to Detroit. That's it.
I wonder which teammate gave him a piece of his mind.
Right.
Donald Driver went over there and said, you better freaking lock in.
Seriously. But it put it in some perspective for me about, you know, Jake Moody has already one of those games, only one, three field goals missed in a game. But yeah. Mason Crosby played 16 years and only had two in his career. That's how good he was.
650, I love them, especially Cajun cheese curds.
So you got to fly to New Orleans and leave that glass of milk outside now.
510, cheese curds on poutine. Delish.
Okay, now we're just showing off our extreme cuisines.
I'm going to eat it.
I'm
Did
out.
You just call them cuisines?
Cuisines.
I hate it when people call them cuisines.
I hate when you call it a coupon.
But that's actually not, it's not inaccurate.
Why it's do just you hate a mispronunciation it? Sensation. No, I don't really hate it. It's a coupon. It's not a coupon.
Tomato, tomato.
Like a small coupon would be. Oh, it's a coupon. It's so cute.
Yeah. Well, they're all small. What are you walking around like you won a golf tournament
like with oversized
life-size coupons?
Let's go to the cheese
Let's
line.
Let's go to Rob in Castro Valley. What do you want to say about cheese, Rob?
I just want to tell you my favorite cheese is cheese out of Seattle, Beecher's flagship. It's probably a mix between Asiago and cheddar. So a little hard, a little soft.
I do like an Asiago, yeah. but like most cheeses, I don't even know what the hell it is.
It's a versatile cheese that is balanced, dense, and creamy.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Google.
That sounds good. Balanced and creamy. That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Versatile, too.
Okay.
With hints of brown butter and caramel.
Is it soft?
If you melt it, it'd be soft.
Okay, like
you're not into like the really hard cheese.
Yeah, like what do we? Well, it feels like it's been sitting out for a week and a half.
Yeah.
I need some soft cheese, okay?
But not moist.
Moist is fine, just not curdled milk. Let's go to Fossey in the East Bay, another person who called a radio show to talk about cheese. We're all just weirdos right now. What, Fossey? What do you want to say?
Yes, sir. What's up, boys? Thanks for having me on. The only right answer is ricotta cheese, man. You can throw it on anything, eggs in the morning, toast, cheese. You can throw it on cheesecake for dessert. It was, Dibs, you got to thank Greg Costell, man. He's really stepped your game up with interview and really enjoyed that Mason Crosby conversation. You got some good question there.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Iron sharpens iron.
Okay, Fozzie.
You know, between Greg Costell and Steve Kerr.
That's a good question.
Thank you. And Ramona gave me some love today for the question. I'm having a good week.
Is it weird that when Fozzie went, yo, Dibs, I swear I was ready for him to be like, your pick stinks.
We all were.
Nobody asked you, clowns.
Oh, my God.
Steelers heading toward a cover.
I thought, think again, but that would be a false start.
How do you false start on a field goal?
Please miss.
What are we doing?
Well, now I'm all conflicted because Boswell's my fantasy kicker. That's my kicker. How far is this? 48 yards? That stinks. He already made it. Now he's got to make it again.
Yeah.
In the driving snow, this is very difficult.
Mike Tomlin pretty cheesed off at seeing that.
He got it. He made it. Skills in Vallejo. Hi, Skills. What the hell's going on with you?
It's windy.
Hey, Willard and Dibs, real quick, your comment about Donald Driver made me laugh very hard. So
okay.
Thanks for that.
That's what we're going for.
Cool. Well, mission accomplished. My favorite cheese is goat cheese, and the reason why is because it reminds me of my now teenage daughter when she was younger. We rounded up a posse. We went out to this goat farm out near Sausalito. She fell in love with the goats right away. She would milk them. She would chase them all over the place and cuddle them. They sent us home with some free samples of goat cheese. She's loved it ever since. And that's why it's my favorite, too.
Skills, it's an amazing story.
It's a great story.
Went to Sausalito, saw some goats, fell in love with them, fed them, went home with cheese.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah.
By the way, the previous caller also, did you notice he said ricotta, but he used a G. That's when you know, like, I bet that guy was actually, like, Italian.
Regatta. Yeah.
Which I thought, like, that has something to do with boats, doesn't it? Regatta?
A regatta is boats, yes.
Okay.
It's an album by the Police, Regatta de Blanc. Yes, they're a band, Grandy.
I love Regatta de Blanc. We drank some last night with turkey burgers. It was beautiful.
We could do a stream of consciousness. Do you want to do another hour?
We basically just did the Tony Bruno show for the last 7 minutes.
Pretty funny.
We should move on now. What's happening next, Grandy? What are we doing?
We got a special Thursday edition of the Football Hour because we've been tied up with Warriors basketball the first 3 days this week.
Damn.
So Football Hour Hour with myself and Kyle Madsen next.
Love it. Love it. Here we go. Grandy, Kyle Madsen, the Niners have a crappy 5-5 record, and they are going to complain about it for an hour and yell and scream and tell you all about it, okay? So that's coming up, and it's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Do you want to do it again tomorrow?
It's going to be Friday tomorrow. Payday Friday.
Payday Friday.
Yeah.
Dubs and Pelicans.
I can't. Short show. We got a little shorty.
Yeah. Go shorty. It's a Warriors game.
It's a Friday.
For Dibs, for Granny, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.